Day 447. Friday, June 21st. Isaiah 9 and 10. Isaiah 9 nominus 21 NKJV. Nevertheless, the gloom will not be upon her who is distressed, as when at first he lightly esteemed the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward more heavily oppressed her. By the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, in Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light, those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death. Upon them a light has shined. You have multiplied the nation and increased its joy. They rejoice before you according to the joy of harvest, as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For you have broken the yoke of his burden and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, as in the day of Midian. For every warrior's sandal from the noisy battle, and garments rolled in blood, will be used for burning and fuel of fire. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end, upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice from that time forward, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. The Lord sent a word against Jacob, and it has fallen on Israel. All the people will know, Ephraim and the inhabitant of Samaria, who say in pride and arrogance of heart, the bricks have fallen down, but we will rebuild with hewn stones, the sycamores are cut down, but we will replace them with cedars. Therefore the Lord shall set up the adversaries of Rezin against him, and spur his enemies on, the Syrians before and the Philistines behind, and they shall devour Israel with an open mouth. For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. For the people do not turn to him who strikes them, nor do they seek the Lord of hosts. Therefore the Lord will cut off head and tail from Israel, palm branch and bulrush in one day. The elder and honorable he is the head. The prophet who teaches lies, he is the tail. For the leaders of this people cause them to err, and those who are led by them are destroyed. Therefore the Lord will have no joy in their young men, nor have mercy on their fatherless and widows, for everyone is a hypocrite and an evildoer, and every mouth speaks folly. For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. For wickedness burns as the fire, it shall devour the briars and thorns, and kindle in the thickets of the forest, they shall mount up like rising smoke. Through the wrath of the Lord of hosts the land is burned up, and the people shall be as fuel for the fire, no man shall spare his brother. And he shall snatch on the right hand and be hungry. He shall devour on the left hand, and not be satisfied. Every man shall eat the flesh of his own arm. Manasseh shall devour Ephraim, and Ephraim Manasseh. Together they shall be against Judah. For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. Isaiah 10:1-34 NKJV. Woe to those who decree unrighteous decrees, who write misfortune, which they have prescribed to rob the needy of justice, and to take what is right from the poor of my people. That widows may be their prey, and that they may rob the fatherless. What will you do in the day of punishment, and in the desolation which will come from afar? To whom will you flee for help? And where will you leave your glory? Without me they shall bow down among the prisoners, and they shall fall among the slain. For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. I will send him against an ungodly nation, and against the people of my wrath, I will give him charge, to seize the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Yet he does not mean so, nor does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy, and cut off not a few nations. For he says, are not my princes altogether kings? Is not Calno like Carchemish? Is not Hamath like Arpad? Is not Samaria like Damascus? As my hand has found the kingdoms of the idols, whose carved images excelled those of Jerusalem and Samaria. As I have done to Samaria and her idols shall I not do also to Jerusalem and her idols? Therefore it shall come to pass when the Lord has performed all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, that he will say, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria, and the glory of his haughty looks. For he says, by the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom. For I am prudent, also I have removed the boundaries of the people, and have robbed their treasuries. So I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. My hand has found like a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathers eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth, and there was no one who moved his wing, nor opened his mouth with even a peep. Shall the axe boast itself against him who chops with it, or shall the saw exalt itself against him who saws with it? As if a rod could wield itself against those who lift it up, or as if a staff could lift up, as if it were not wood. Therefore the Lord of hosts, will send leanness among his fat ones, and under his glory he will kindle a burning like the burning of a fire. So the light of Israel will be for a fire, and his Holy One for a flame. It will burn and devour his thorns and his briars in one day. And it will consume the glory of his forest and of his fruitful field, both soul and body, and they will be as when a sick man wastes away. Then the rest of the trees of his forest will be so few in number that a child may write them, and it shall come to pass in that day that the remnant of Israel and such as have escaped of the house of Jacob will never again depend on him who defeated them, but will depend on the Lord, the Holy One of Israel in truth. The remnant will return, the remnant of Jacob, to the mighty God. For though your people, O Israel, be as the sand of the sea, a remnant of them will return. The destruction decreed shall overflow with righteousness. For the Lord God of hosts will make a determined end in the midst of all the land. Therefore thus says the Lord God of hosts, O my people, who dwell in Zion, do not be afraid of the Assyrian. He shall strike you with a rod and lift up his staff against you, in the manner of Egypt. For yet a very little while and the indignation will cease, as will my anger in their destruction. And the Lord of hosts will stir up a scourge for him like the slaughter of Midian at the rock of Oreb. As his rod was on the sea, so will he lift it up in the manner of Egypt. It shall come to pass in that day that his burden will be taken away from your shoulder, and his yoke from your neck, and the yoke will be destroyed because of the anointing oil. He has come to Aiath, he has passed Migron, at Michmash he has attended to his equipment, they have gone along the ridge, they have taken up lodging at Geba. Ramah is afraid, Gibeah of Saul has fled. Lift up your voice, O daughter of Galim, cause it to be heard as far as Laish, O poor Anathoth. Madmena has fled, the inhabitants of Gebim seek refuge. As yet he will remain at Nob that day, he will shake his fist at the mount of the daughter of Zion, the hill of Jerusalem. Behold, the Lord of hosts, will lop off the bough with terror, those of high stature will be hewn down, and the haughty will be humbled. He will cut down the thickets of the forest with iron, and Lebanon will fall by the Mighty One. Daily Deep Dive, the UCG Reading Plan states. Verse 1 makes it clear that this is a continuation of chapter 8, the gloom having been brought up in Isaiah 8:22. Chapter 9 begins with the prophecy of a great light upon the lands mentioned, which even Jewish teaching has acknowledged as being a messianic reference. Matthew cited it as being fulfilled by Jesus, Matthew 4:13-16. When the prophecy was written, the northern kingdom territories of Galilee and Naphtali were about to be enslaved and taken captive. The ancient tribal allotments of Zebulun and Naphtali, Joshua 19:10-30, which included Galilee, were the first to feel the brunt of the Assyrian invasions, 2 Kings 15:29. The three phrases at the end of the verse, the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles or nations, indicate administrative districts of the Assyrian conqueror Tiglath-Pileser III as a result of the three campaigns he waged in the west around 733 BC. Nelson Study Bible, note on Isaiah 9:1. The oppression of these lands changed hands over time, in Jesus' day being under the dominion of the Edomite Herods, who themselves were subject to Rome. A few verses later, it is explained that the reason light will shine upon these lands is the birth of a child, a son, verse 6, seemingly the same son mentioned in Isaiah 7:14. Yet this is clearly no child of Isaiah the prophet or of anyone else of his day, for this son is called Mighty God. This then is a reference to Jesus Christ alone. Yet some may find the term Everlasting Father confusing. Jesus is not God the Father, even though Trinitarians mistakenly argue that they constitute one and the same being while somehow existing as distinct persons. The Father and Son are indeed divine members of the same one God, that is the one God family, albeit two distinct beings. See our free booklet Who is God? For a fuller explanation. And some may be surprised to learn that like God the Father, Jesus is the Father of all creation. For God the Father created all things through Jesus Christ, Ephesians 3:9. This is how Jesus, as God and Creator, was the Father of Adam and thus mankind, compare Luke 3:38. And it is why he is called the Everlasting Father. In the same passage, that is Isaiah 9:6-7, we have a perfect example of how a prophecy can skip ahead in time with no obvious indication. For the reference to the child being born is to Jesus' first coming in human flesh 2,000 years ago, while his rule of a government is a reference to his second coming, which has not yet occurred. This wonderful promise of the future, however, is followed by a series of four chastisements of Israel for their present disobedience, each ending with the same statement about God's anger we first encountered in Isaiah 5:25. But his hand is stretched out still. While the unwary people contemplated aggrandizements of their buildings, Isaiah 9:9-10, God had already set events in motion that would carry the people away. The Syrian king Rezin's adversaries, verse 11, the Assyrians would soon swoop into Israel with the subjugated Syrians then pressed into Assyrian service, verse 12. The Israelites would be taken as prisoners of the enemy, Isaiah 10:4. In siege and then captivity, with little food to go around, the Israelites would be set against one another in a fight for survival, Isaiah 9:18-21. The end of verse 21 seems to indicate that Judah is part of this infighting in captivity, though it is possibly a reference to Israel's former attacks on Judah for which Israel is being judged. It should be noted that the Assyrians, under a later ruler Sennacherib, did deport vast numbers from Judah 20 years after the fall of Samaria, so that many Jews then joined the northern tribes in captivity. Yet the ancient invasion and captivity of Israel and Judah by Assyria, it should be mentioned, was a mere forerunner of end-time events yet to come. That this prophecy has a dual application to the last days appears likely from the description of the emergence from captivity at the time of Christ's return, Isaiah 11:1-12:6. The ancient captivity of Israel came to an end more than 2,000 years ago, but this was not accompanied by the coming of the Messiah or even a return to dwell and remain in the Promised Land. In fact, the descendants of Israel have never returned en masse to the Holy Land. Thus, a captivity ending with the Messiah's coming and a resettlement of the Promised Land must be yet future. It should also be noted that only a small percentage of Jews returned from the later Babylonian captivity. The majority remained in Babylon and their descendants later migrated to other lands. Of the small number who did return from Babylon, their descendants were later expelled by the Romans. Thus, for the most part, the Jews of the world have remained scattered. The minority who have returned to the land of Israel in the past century certainly does not fulfill the prophecy of Israel and Judah returning as a whole from captivity at the coming of the Messiah. Thus, there is a future captivity coming. Let us therefore take warning, for as it was in Isaiah's day, God's hand is stretched out still. Assyria, the rod of God's anger. Again, there is indication that the prophecy is a continuation of the one begun in chapter 7 to Ahaz. Remember that Isaiah was accompanied by his son Shear-Jashub, meaning, remnant shall return. And here we find these very words in Isaiah 10:21. Similarly, verse 6 contains the phrase to seize the spoil, to take the prey, which is reminiscent of the name of Isaiah's second son, Maher-Shalal Hash-Baz, quick to the plunder, swift to the spoil, introduced in chapter 8. Assyria is used by God to punish Israel. Verse 11 states the Assyrian leader's intention to attack and plunder Jerusalem as well as Samaria. As mentioned previously in the Beyond Today Bible commentary, the Assyrians under the later king Sennacherib invaded Judah around 20 years after the fall of Samaria. Sennacherib is successful in destroying and plundering a major portion of Judah. He actually besieges Jerusalem, but in the end, God miraculously devastates his army. Isaiah 10 certainly appears to apply to these events, but there is a broader picture here we should also consider. This chapter seems to flow right into the next one, Isaiah 11, which clearly concerns the end-time return of Christ and the establishment of his kingdom over all nations. Indeed, as already explained, Isaiah 7-12 seems to be one long related section of prophecy. Throughout it, we find a number of messianic references, building to a crescendo in the clearly millennial prophecies at the end. All of this provides a basis for looking on much of the prophetic material in these chapters as dual in interpretation, applying to the events of Isaiah's day, but as a forerunner of even greater events that will transpire in the end time. Thus, while God speaks in Isaiah 10 of bringing Assyria against Israel and Judah, he may well have been referring both to the ancient invasions that took place in Isaiah's time, and to another Assyrian invasion of the end time. Indeed, the next chapter shows Israel returning from Assyrian captivity at Christ's second coming, Isaiah 11:11, so this seems rather likely. We might ask then, who are the Assyrians today? The ancient Israelites who were taken into Assyrian captivity eventually migrated into Northwest Europe. See our booklet The United States and Britain in Bible Prophecy to learn more. Likewise, the Assyrians, after their empire fell in 612 BC, migrated into Europe behind them. The Roman naturalist Pliny the Elder located the Assyrians north of the Black Sea in his day, the 1st century AD. Natural History. Book 4 CC 12. A few hundred years later, Jerome, one of the post-Nicene Catholic fathers, applied Psalm 83 to the Germanic tribes invading Western Europe along the Rhine. For Assur, the Assyrian, also is joined with them. Nicene and post-Nicene fathers, letter 123, Saic 16. And of the Germanic peoples, Smith's Classical Dictionary states, there can be no doubt that they migrated into Europe from the Caucasus and the countries around the Black and Caspian Seas. Germania, p. 361. Indeed, a significant portion of the Germanic people of Central Europe today appear to be descended from the Assyrians of old. To bring divine punishment on the Israelites from a foreign power in Isaiah's day, Assyria was the logical choice. Ancient Assyria, as we've seen, was the preeminent empire of the day. It was also one of the most warlike and imperialistic nations in history. Its imperialistic ethic was embodied in the Middle Assyrian coronation ritual, in which the officiating priest solemnly charged the king, "Expand your land." Assyria, the Oxford Companion to the Bible, 1993, p. 63. And lest we think such national motivation is just ancient history, we should remember Adolf Hitler's more recent cries for Lebensraum, living space. Of course, many nations have engaged in imperialism and territorial expansion in modern times. Nevertheless, it is significant that this thread is still found in the modern history of the Assyrian people along with other Europeans. In fact, in the years ahead, a resurgence of imperialism is prophesied to grip the European continent. Various biblical prophecies show that a European-centered revival of the Roman Empire, called the Beast and Babylon, will be the dominant power in the world just prior to the return of Jesus Christ. See Daniel 2:7-11, Revelation 13:17-18. From Isaiah 10 and other prophecies that seem to indicate the Assyrian ruler and people as important players on the end time scene and as the principal agents of wrath against Israel, it appears that these Central European people will constitute the leading force in the coming power block, as was the case in a number of past revivals of the Roman beast system. Indeed, it makes even more sense when we realize that they make up around one-third of the population of Europe, clearly a dominating force. Yet there certainly will be other national groups making up the coming European Empire as well. Europe's subjugation of the Israelite nations of the end time will be fierce, as a look back at ancient times reveals. Panels from Assyrian archaeological sites depict graphic scenes of the gruesome savagery with which these ancient conquerors treated their subjugated peoples. Even so, God indicates here in Isaiah 10 and in other prophecies such as Nahum, that the Assyrians of the end time will go overboard in their harsh treatment of the modern Israelites. Indeed, this must be the case since the time of trouble yet to come on the peoples of Israel will be worse than anything that has ever happened before. Jeremiah 37, Daniel 12:1, Matthew 4:21. failing to see themselves as tools in God's hands, his rod of punishment on Israel, the Assyrians arrogantly viewed their subjugation of Israel as a mere conquest of their own doing and their struggle to take over the world. Isaiah 10:5, Isaiah 10:7, Isaiah 10:15, and so it will also be in the end time. The same basic attitude is shown in Habakkuk 1 to be shared by the Babylonian Chaldeans, and, as we will see when we later consider a prophecy of Babylon in Isaiah 13. The Babylonian Chaldeans will make up another significant portion of the latter-day European alliance. But in considering the problems of the Assyrians and Babylonians, let us not lose the focus that God is severely displeased here with his own people, Israel calling them an ungodly nation, the people of my wrath, 10:6. Despite the blessings he has showered on them, they flagrantly sin and rebel against him. That is why God sends these other peoples to deal with them. Afterward, God will punish the Assyrians and Babylonians as well for their arrogance and cruelty. And Israel will at last go free. Later in Isaiah, we will see Assyria and Israel dwelling happily with one another under the rule of Jesus Christ in Isaiah 19:24. The slaughter of Midian in Isaiah 10:26 is a reference to the defeat of the Midianites by Gideon and Israel's release from Midianite oppression. Judges 7:25. The same story was alluded to in Isaiah 9:4. We also see mention of the Red Sea crossing and Israel's release from Egyptian oppression. These are used as types of the release from Assyrian oppression, Isaiah 10:27. Verses 28-32 are describing a journey from Aath, or Ai, about 10 miles north of Jerusalem to Nob, which overlooks Jerusalem. Indeed, each city listed is one step closer to the Jewish capital. This describes the terror of the inhabitants of those areas as the Assyrian forces inexorably march on Jerusalem. Though disputed, this could be the route Sennacherib's invasion would take. We do know that he plundered a large part of Judah, but it could also describe the final advance of a future Assyrian commander on Jerusalem from the gathering place at Megiddo in the north of Israel. Compare Revelation 16, Revelation 19:19, Zechariah 14:12. In either case, God will destroy the enemy, Isaiah 10:33-34, and,